Welcome to the Serious TV Drama Podcast with Scott and Dan. I'm Scott, and with me as always, the crazy white fella to my most powerful man in the world, it's Dan.
Hey, good evening.
Good evening, Dan. We are here for an unusual circumstance for us, I would say.
Yeah.
We've gotten so locked into our, you know, regularly scheduled formatted podcast that we're finally doing something out of the norm. We're going to be talking about another TV show, a series finale, in fact, for a show that we both have a lot of affection for.
And, yeah, totally.
Yeah. So we're talking Leftovers here, and we know we're entering a very busy arena because it seems like every other person we know who podcasts does a podcast about the Leftovers. So, who cares?
But how many of them are going to swear in the first minute?
Oh, yeah.
Not all of them, I'm guessing.
Yeah, probably not.
So, no, whenever we leave the box that we kind of put ourselves in for our regular podcast, it tends to go pretty well, and we end up with the good feedback and have a fun time recording. So I figured, why the heck not?
Yes, heck. I mean, it's like, I mean, golly gee willikers, it's an actual conversation between us instead of, you know, me droning on or you having to do whatever the heck you have to do, whatever. So, we've talked about The Leftovers before on the podcast. I know it came up in one of our best ofs. Was it best of 2015 or 16? I forget which year it was.
Yeah, probably both of them. I get the feeling that we've gave props to Carrie Coon for both seasons, the first two seasons, and then, you know, we gave the show itself and Mr. Throw some mad props for season two. So I know we've covered it in various instances.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty much on record as being someone who was not the biggest fan of season one. I felt some things were a bit on the pretentious side, and I don't just mean the original opening credit sequence, which was really pretentious, but just, I mean, I really adored or really liked three episodes that I remember from the first season. But otherwise, I felt, you know, the big master plan of the Guilty Remnants was, number one, kind of obvious, and number two, kind of stupid. But forget season one. And if you guys like season one, who listens to this, you know, more power to you.
I was mostly okay with it. I can skip some of the, teen angst, post-departure pointlessness.
Oh, the daughter was incredibly annoying in season one.
Yeah.
And her friend, whatever. But
I think, yeah. But I'm sure if we rewatch that season now, we might find a few more things to like about it, just knowing how it all turns out.
I agree. I think that's very likely. It's kind of like the way we know some people, like, they'll knock, you know, the season one of something like Parks and Recreation or even Breaking Bad, whatever. And then I'd be the person's like, no, I think the first seasons of those are just fine. You know, well, Parks and Rec does need a little work just because of the Leslie Knope character. They didn't figure out how to do her until the second season. But other than that, I think it's really good.
Yeah, and Mark's pretty bland, but I liked it. You know, when I watched it the first time, I'm just like, this is funny. I laughed, you know, pretty much the whole time. I mean, it wasn't as funny as it gets, but I didn't understand why people were bitching about it. Probably just because, like, they heard one person bitch about it, Jack Leadfelter, and then they have to fucking copy him.
There you go. So with The Leftovers, they hooked me in with season two. I think season two is by far one of the best seasons of television I've seen in recent years. And, you know, and so that was a major turnaround for me. And I love that the show kind of made me reverse step on it. And so then season three came along. And I don't know if I love season three quite as much as season two, but it was still pretty damn compelling television.
I think it's the Guardians thing for us, where it's not like surprisingly good, but it's like still really good.
Yeah, I mean, I would also attribute it to there were certain storylines that really kept me fascinated in season two that we just didn't have in season three because it's a shorter season also, so it honed down a bit more. You know, so yeah. I other than her appearing one time, like there was nothing like Regina King's character in season three beyond that one scene. And she was like one of my favorite characters in season two. Because she's, I mean, she's just a marvelous actress anyway. And so that scene between her and Carrie Coon in season two is, I thought, one of the best scenes of the year, television-wise. So, but back to season three, we had this whole interesting thing where, was it roughly, it felt like half the season was in Australia. Is that about right? Or was it even more than that? It seemed like.
Yeah, I think a bit more. I think they got there in episode three-ish. But you know, there was a lot of bouncing around between the various characters this season.
Right. So we built up to that penultimate episode, which was where they gave us the little mind trip of Kevin going into the, what do we call that? I don't know how to refer to that. It's, what do you call the alternate universe that he goes to? Or do we just call it an alternate universe? I don't know what to call it.
I don't know. Since I'm not a mindless sheep, I'm not going to call it the Flash Sideways. I just call it Kevin's Hotel.
Unfortunately, we didn't get to visit Kevin's Hotel in it. But it was a lot of fun. It was a little wacky. Everything, I mean, come on. Just the fact that they had a thing where he had to, you know, basically making fun of, you know, the infamous Justin Thoreau penis as a method of identification. That alone, like, okay, their sense of humor is really sharpened to something I never expected right now. But
yeah,
that was a pretty intense episode that ended with basically destroying that world or universe with the nuclear war by the end of it. So we come to the finale, and one really interesting thing before it even starts is the realization that a lot of the things that they had been in one form or another kind of building up to ended up not mattering. And that was like, I think that was a big point of the previous episode, like the stuff with getting the words to the song to avert the flood and all these other things. Like, yeah, it's not, none of that's actually consequential at all. It turned out, because none of it ended up happening.
Yeah, they really put the spotlight on how like ridiculous that kind of thing is. You know, I think they probably were making some points, like, you know, as to the way people take these things in the real world too. But for the episode and like the show, it really worked nice and tied off a lot of those storylines.
Yeah, it was funny how big a deal they continued to make about the 7th anniversary of the departure. Although it's never made clear, other than it being Matt's big thing, that why would it matter that it's 7 years? Well, why that number? Why I could see it being like the 10-year anniversary or the 5-year. 7? I didn't really get that. Except I think that was Matt's big thing. He was kind of making it like that was supposed to be the big day, I think, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, I think somebody was arguing with him about it, like in some episode, maybe, and like it was something to do with the Bible. I don't know. I kind of don't know.
So what's interesting? So this episode, the final episode, really talk about getting honed down. And I think we've talked in the past when we talked a little bit about The Leftovers. Some of our favorite episodes tended to be the very specific character centric episodes. Like Nora's had a couple. I think she's had two now that were almost exclusively all Nora episodes, and there was at least one or two Matt episodes.
Yeah, the ones that are tightly focused tend to be, you know, I don't know. They seem to have more like resolution. While like the other episodes can, you know, don't really have that much of an arc because they're part of like the larger story. So these ones, they always tend to have like a beginning, middle, and end.
Right, and also speaking of arcs, is because you're following a character from beginning to end, so they actually have a story arc for the episode, as opposed to a season arc where we just see bits and pieces of it, you know, over the course of episodes. So you feel like you've actually gotten, even if it's one piece in the season-long puzzle, you still feel like you've got a complete story, as opposed to just a connecting piece. I think that's another reason we tend to like those better.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting that, like, on a show like this, those episodes tend to be the ones that, for the most part, people end up liking a lot and they really gush over. But then, like, on a show like Breaking Bad, would do something like that, then people just bitch and bitch and bitch. Oh, what's this fly have to do with anything? I don't fucking get it. I'm stupid. I mean, you know, you know, with that kind of show, it'd be like, well, it has a more tight focus for an episode. People just sometimes just just didn't work for them at all, and they just didn't get it.
Well, you know what I think of those people, and, you know.
And they know what I think of them.
It's like, oh no, I'm forced to watch Bryan Cranston doing a master thespian class in acting for an hour. Oh, poor me. Idiots. But with this, so the focus switches back to, for the most, well, not mostly, it's almost exclusively about Nora. I think the title of the episode was The Book of Nora, right? So kind of a play on the Book of Kevin thing from earlier in the season. So we start, I remember the episode starts with present day Nora. And
before you talk about the episode, did you have any expectations going in? Like what were there anything, things that you thought were going to happen or might happen?
I really didn't know where they were going to go after what happened in the previous episode, or the previous couple episodes, quite frankly. So which I really liked. I liked that I went to this like with no, I didn't really have expectations, actually. We know Damon Lindelof is, and how he got to some degree burned by what happened with the Lost finale for many people. It was one of those infamously polarizing finales, you know, like The Sopranos and a few others over the years. So on one hand, you figure, okay, he's been through this trial by fire before. So I'm curious to see what he does now. It's interesting that, you know, one could, if they want, I know we don't want to, so I know we're not going to, one could draw some sort of parallels between what happened in Lost and what happens here. I think it's significantly different, so I wouldn't really bother doing that. But I like the fact that I think Lindelof kind of thought about that and said, well, fuck it, we're going to do the story we want to do. And to a certain degree, this is something that they had planned on. I think he wanted to be, you know, about, you know, Kevin and Nora and somehow getting those two back together. And how do we get to that point? And at what point in time is that? It's an interesting choice for, you know, because remember there was that, and I think they even showed a clip of it in the episode, or maybe it was in the previously on The Leftovers, I don't remember, when Nora kind of sort of jokingly gives a little synopsis of their relationship. And I'm like, yeah, that's pretty dead on. You guys do have a very, you know, toxic, codependent, it's, I've never thought that was a great relationship between the two of them, quite frankly. But maybe what happens here is what one can, if one wants to be positive about it, maybe this is what needed to happen to get these two to be together after all, where it wasn't built on so many secrets and lies and different things that just didn't, that just spelled doom for that relationship, I thought, you know, from the get-go.
Right.
What did you how did you feel about it going into it? Did you have any sort of expectations or, you know, well, assumptions?
I knew it would be good. I didn't really give a lot of thought to it and didn't do a lot of theorizing. I mean, I did a little bit when I was on the podcast with Kelly and Susan a couple weeks ago, and I just had a, you know, just a couple of theories and assumptions. I thought Lori didn't kill herself, and I thought that there was a chance that Matt would go through the machine instead of Nora, and, like, you know, that she just got blasted by residual radiation or something. And I don't know, just like, you know, just brainstorming a little bit. But it's not like the Lost days were just fucking, like, I had a list of, like, things that I wrote down, like, that I was, like, you know, wondering what were going to happen. I'm glad that, I don't know, kind of feels like I've matured a little bit, and maybe, like, you know, Lindelof has matured a bit too, and, like, the storytelling is just, like, all these, like, goofy little, like, you know, things that you want answered, you want to tick off on a checklist, just didn't really matter at all this time. I just kind of just enjoyed the story for what it was, and it didn't kind of, you know, really have to, like, I don't know, make it about myself by, like, you know, trying to figure everything out.
Right, that makes sense. Also, the problem with the show, and maybe it was an actual problem with the show like Lost, was there were just too many, that maybe they played it too cute for too long, so you ended up, like, having too many, all these little mysteries that people needed solving. You know, so you I remember lists of, like, 100 different things. Like, yeah, that's the problem. It's the, because when Lost always had the mystery in a box kind of a format, where, you know, one of the things they felt like the way to hook people and to keep them going was, oh, let's throw another mystery in here. Let's throw another question mark in here. Let's throw another thing you don't understand in here that'll hopefully eventually be explained. I don't feel there was at nearly remotely as much of that with The Leftovers as there was with a show like that, or a few other shows over the years. But
No.
I mean, I think for, with The Leftovers, it, for me, it was less about the mystery, other than, you know, earlier in the season seeing Nora as a considerably older woman, older looking woman, and going by the name of Sarah. I'm just wondering how we're going to get there. But that was just it. How are we going to get there, and what's the explanation behind it? But I think with The Leftovers, if you're like, it's just simply, what's going to happen? Where, how do you finish this story? You know? And I would say I really liked the decisions that they made here. A story that, you know, when The Leftovers starts out, it feels like it's a really big story. I mean, it's something that happened on a global scale. And I like the fact that when we got down to the series finale, it wasn't about the world. It wasn't about the 2% or the 98% or whatever. It was really about these two people. And that's kind of nice. And I think it really sharpened the writing. And when you have like performers like Harry Coon and Justin Theroux really doing wonders in, you know, and even in their aging makeup or her lack of makeup or whatever, you know, really bringing home a performance, as we would expect, because if there's one thing the show has been excelled at, it's their performances by these actors and a few others on the show.
Well, yeah,
So.
that's why we like them and want them to, like, you know, be happy and whatever, just because, I mean, we just like what we see, even though the, you know, the characters are do some really shitty, terrible stuff and are awful together, we still, you know, manage to just kind of, like, you know, get a, go along for the ride and just kind of hope for the best and, you know, get locked in by the emotional stuff. And then, you know, it's always been that kind of a show. I mean, it's more emotional than cerebral. We're not giving a lot of thought about, like, you know what, if dogs are taking over the world and shit, we just, you know, I mean, all I really, you know, I wouldn't have spent, like, you know, the last 40 minutes tearing up if, like, you know, I found out if, like, the dog was really the president instead of just our president being a dog. But
Yeah, and I was kind of happy. I'll give you one concern I've had with The Leftovers, which kind of had dissipated over the last few weeks, thankfully, because of Lindelof sometimes in other projects he's worked on, maybe to a certain degree, well, not to a certain degree, to a great degree with the final 15, 20 minutes or whatever of Lost, and also what he did in that, you know, Prometheus. And we won't, and I'm not going to go on a rant about how much I dislike that movie. But what I'm talking about is like feeling the need to like start trying to answer like life's big questions. And it always feels like when he's done that, he almost takes a little saccharine, like, you know, embrace this all kumbaya, whatever kind of feeling, or something which was not, which people mistake for being profound, and leads me to make comments like the Emperor's got no clothes. I mean, there's nothing,
But yeah,
nothing in
it's almost
Prometheus is
like,
profound. You know, I hate
yeah.
when people try to make like it. It's like, no, it's not. You can pick up a cheap paperback from the 70s, plenty of them that were like this. Chariots of the Gods, anybody, it's the same thing. Here we go. See, I ended up talking about Prometheus. Anyway, back to this. But I was very, very pleased. If I say right off the bat, one thing I really loved about the finale is that in my mind, we didn't get into any of that. We
No.
didn't. It didn't go there at all. I mean, there are things that happen throughout the season, which and when if one re and one recalls them, you know, one can mistake them for being that, but it's not. You know, I mean, I think to a certain degree, remember there was that flashback that one of the episodes began with? Was it the first one this season? The one with the religious sect from, I guess, at least 100 or 200, a couple hundred years ago. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, for the 19th century religious sect, that was the beginning of the season.
Right. And there was a whole thing where they, you know, originally they were all going up on their roofs because they thought there was something like the rapture was coming or something was about to happen. And then eventually it just kept being that woman who kept doing it. And, you know, over and over, nothing happens, which I think is kind of like a nice foreshadowing of, hey, guess what? Nothing's going to happen on the anniversary of the departure, you know. But I just like that this episode wasn't about that. And it was really about Nora and eventually Nora and Kevin. So, how do you want to tackle this? Do you want to talk about in certain parts or just how it want to zoom right to the end and, you know, the theories that are now getting batted around about this? Or I'll let you start because I know you're the one who wanted to do this podcast in the first place. So I'll let you start.
Yeah. I thought it was really, I was completely along for, completely into it last night when I watched it. Just completely captivated by what I was seeing. I thought that, I don't know, I'm speechless. Fuck me.
Okay. Wait, not okay to the fuck you part. Anyway.
Not literally.
Well, excuse me. So, there we go. Should hit the mute button for that one. So we have Nora going through the... Oh, it started with the interview, right? Was it the taped interview
thing? Right, yeah.
Which I'll also point to as being one of the first things in a long link, chain link of events throughout the episode, which are about lies and lying. And it's very funny that in that moment when she does the initial recording and then the scientists who are talking to her off camera don't believe her and they think she's lying. And she says, I don't lie, which is a massive lie because, yeah, you've lied more than pretty much anyone else on this show. And you know, I'm not saying it's a. Well, I guess it is a bad thing, actually. but I think that's there for a reason, because then what we're going to be seeing for the next 40-something, 45, whatever number of minutes before we get to the final scenes with her and Kevin are different stories, different versions of things which are falsehoods and, you know, misdirects, whatever. So there's just a long chain of people being called out for lying or stories that aren't really true, and so on and so forth. Because you go from that, and then you have that really lovely scene, a really nice scene between her and her brother, Matt.
Oh yeah.
I thought that was like a really nice scene for both of them. I think it might have been his best scene of the year, and I know he's had some good stuff this year. I know he had that one focused episode that was just insane with God and the lion and everything else. But I think, although he's like, you know, he's almost Job in that episode, and I don't mean the Arrested Development character. I'm talking about the biblical character. The first emotional wave that hit me and probably you and other people was this conversation between them. Going back to the line thing, I mean, they're starting up for, I guess they've always done this version of Mad Libs where she calls them Mat Libs, where that's the game where you fill in all the different words, you know, nouns, verbs, and then you turn and you read the story that you've constructed with all these goofy phrases. But that's a form of you're making up a story. And then apparently they're talking about an obituary, which is going to be a lie, essentially. And what he's going to tell people, which is a lie, you know. So it just, you know, it keeps going on and on. And the fact that she has lied to get herself into this position to get into the machine. So now, when she's in the machine and, you know, the irradiated liquid starts to fill up the thing, and then they cut away just at that when she gasps, just as the, you know, it's reaching her chin, whatever.
Yeah.
And they cut away from that. Now, at that point, did you start wondering, okay, did she actually do it or not? And are we, and at what point are we actually going to be able to figure that out? Because what did you think at that point? Because they cut away from that deliberately. So we never saw, there's no flash of white or anything like that, which is what I thought they were going to do initially. I just like that right off the bat they made it like, okay, right now you don't know.
Yeah, and I didn't know for, you know, many, I guess I still don't know, but, as for the episode, you know, I mean, you know, I can see why people will take the narrative literally, but, you know, like you said, Nora can't always be trusted, so as such, she is an unreliable narrator, and since we don't see things happen, you can't be 100% certain, even if you'd like to.
Right.
You just can't be certain, so... But, you know, it just, it was that, you know, it was just the kind of thing where it just, you know, they kind of kept you guessing for quite a while after that. Well, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. You know, there'd be, you know, some stuff that didn't feel quite right. There'd be some stuff that didn't feel quite real, like maybe you're in some weird reality. I mean, just, it was, you know, they kept you going, but not in like a, you know, a cheap way. It just kind of felt like, you know, just kind of nice and natural way.
Well, it was interesting. I think more so than any episode, including the trips to Kevin's other, you know, dead world reality, the hotel, etc. I don't think there's been an episode of Leftovers where we were in a certain state of confusion for such a long period of time. Because you're constantly going, wait, what happened? And especially then when the business with Kevin showing up and what he's saying, it's like,
yeah.
Okay, really? What the hell happened? Whatever. Is this Flashpoint? No, I'm just kidding. But you know, just couldn't figure out what the heck was going on. I understood right from the point where, you know, it cuts away. It's like, okay, they're going for ambiguity here. So they really want to mess with you to leave this question open, and hopefully, and you know, it's still up for debate, obviously, it'll be answered by the time we get to those last 10, 15, 20 minutes of this episode. Cause it looked like this is going to go on. I like to count how many minutes of this episode I spent watching Nora/Sarah ride her bike. There's a lot of bike riding in this episode, back and forth and back and forth.
Yeah, I've been biking a lot lately, so I like that. I thought they were definitely playing to me as the audience.
Okay, maybe there's something to that. So we have that whole opening section, and then we fast forward to her as Sarah. We don't know at this point how many years later this is, though she's obviously aged from her hair, her skin, etc. And we just have all these scenes where she's interacts with this nun. She apparently takes care of these doves. There's that weird moment where she's taking all these doves, have these little messages on them, and so she just kind of collects them in a bucket like she's gonna throw them away. Although she later does tend to read them. I guess that's a thing. I guess the doves are hired out to do that for different weddings, because we see that happen at this wedding. So I guess that's a regular thing that they do.
I kind of do think I kind of found it was funny, because I mean she was kind of participating in, like, you know, not really a scam, but like what she was doing, you know, like the nun would say it'd be one thing, and then the birds would go off, whatever, and it kind of seemed like that'd be the kind of thing that Nora would call bullshit on back when she was an investigator.
Right. It's another lie. I mean, it's a lie. People, I mean, yeah. It's even if the people, like, either at this wedding or at any previous wedding, I mean, if they think about it logically, they know, like, well, no, doves don't fly all around the world. It's not going to happen, you know.
Right.
But this is the story that they choose to believe. It's what people, you know, actively participate in. People actively participating in a lie, which is fine, because it's a white lie. It's not hurting anybody, kind of a thing. It's just it makes you feel better, and that's also I think that's a major theme throughout this episode. Like, we have that scene when she goes and confronts that nun later on, and there's that whole back and forth, because she thinks she's picked up on the fact that, hey, looks like the nun is getting some. Or something,
yeah.
Which is like, whoa. But the whole biz where they talk about what the truth is or not, and the nun says, like, it's a nicer story. And I think there's a huge reason you put that there. you know, and it's obviously it's really links to Nora's big story at the end, and either one chooses to believe it or not. But like I said, it's a running thing throughout the episode. I mean, so when Kevin shows up, talk about lie, he tries this massive lie that he's basically a blank slate as far as Nora's concerned, since they met that one time in the corridor of the was a school where they met, I think, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Now I hadn't really, and I had in no way caught on to what might be going on at this point. So I would say that was probably the point where I was like the most, you know, what the fuck is going on here kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought maybe Kevin had like, you know, had some kind of like a really bad psychotic break and just like, you know, was pretty much didn't have much left of his mind and just was kind of like, you know, focused on her, but not really knowing why.
Maybe. Right. But true. And I think I had thoughts like that as well. And then they totally get undercut when we see Nora bike over to that phone booth and call Lori. And since you said it yourself, you mentioned it on the other podcast with the Geek Girls, also letting us know, hey, guess what? Lori's alive. She didn't commit suicide after all. But their conversation kind of like makes the Kevin thing more confusing because her reaction is like, so that's what he's doing? Huh. You're already getting the sense like, wait a minute, there's something wrong here. Because, you know, unless Kevin's had a very recent psychotic break or something, this doesn't seem to be jiving with the way, with Lori's reaction here. So
yeah, I had the same thought. Upon more reflection, I'm not so sure, because I mean, definitely like the way Lori reacts the first time Kevin goes off on a Australia mission and kind of like, you know, blows his top and does some crazy shit. You know, it's definitely far different than this, but if like, you know, the stories that they tell at the end are true and Kevin's been like on this like romantic, like, you know, burning all his vacation time forever, like coming to Australia, doing this kind of thing, I could see Lori being like at a point where if like this has been going on for like, you know, 15, 20 years, where like maybe she'd be like, you know, has accepted the fact that like that's what Kevin needs to do and it's kind of like okay with it. And that's why she kind of has like a little more of a peaceful reaction to it.
Possibly. That's definitely one definite strong way to interpret it. I mean, on the other hand, I'm not actually sure that Lori knows that's what Kevin's been doing every year. Because I don't know if this is something Kevin's would disclose to other people or not. We don't know. I don't think he actually says he's told anybody that he does this, you know, on his vacation every 2 weeks. Though you'd think, especially when it becomes clear that they're still neighbors, they would, unless he's been lying to them every year, they would know he's going to Australia for 2 weeks every year, and that's the reason why. That's one of those ambiguities. It's up for we just fill it in ourselves and how we choose to. Because I know there are some people who might have an issue with if Laurie knew that he was doing this every year. It seems almost cruel not to have done something to if she can't tell him because of doctor-patient confidentiality. Maybe she would have told Nora then or something and just to see how she feels right about that. So that's why that's the only reason I'm not sure that she knew. Cause I feel though she couldn't say anything to Kevin, I think she would have said something to Nora, especially if she knows he keeps going to Australia every year. Although, you know, it's a continent. It's not like she knows he'd be going to like near her town, but still the fact that there's a risk, you'd think she would let her know about it. That's the only reason I'm not sure Lori would be aware of it. But to go to your point, she reacts rather calmly to all of it. So it does make me think, well, maybe she does know. Again, we don't know. It's, you know, I kind of love that we don't know because it, in the end, that's what makes what happens in the final scenes so open to interpretation, and I really enjoy that. I think Lindelof decided. Lindelof loves the Sopranos finale. A lot of people don't. I didn't when it first aired. I've grown to love it in the years since. And if there's ever a more infamous ending to a TV show where you're left like not knowing what what's going on and what you know, ambiguous, like, wait, is something about to happen or not? Are they just having dinner or is something bad about to happen? We don't know. And I think he kind of took that, but he grounded it more in the story of the show. So he just gave us something to, you know, it's for you to decide. And I like to think of it, because this show is so well done. Although any form of, you know, entertainment could be seen as art, I guess. But I really think this really truly is a work of art, you know, like some of the much better shows that we've talked about over the years. And what is art if not something that's always open to interpretation depending on how different people look at it? So that's why I don't think there's any right or wrong as far as this series is concerned, at least.
Yeah, I love that too, and the way the show does it is really, it's just interesting, because I mean, like, you can have, you know, the view, any pretty much anybody that watches it, if they just kind of watch it and pay attention and have an open mind, I mean, you can have so many different ideas as to what's actually happening, and you're not necessarily wrong. I mean, if there's somebody that watched the episodes before this, the one with the Laurie one, if somebody watched that episode and was completely bought the whole narrative and thought and like actually thinks she committed suicide at the end, then this scene with Nora and Laurie would be like a red flag that just like, okay, maybe like this reality that we're seeing here isn't a real one. And then everything after that would be completely suspect, and they would like just assume that this is like an afterlife or something. I mean, you know, just and that isn't necessarily a wrong answer either. I mean, for all right. I know, that is what happened. And I really like that we don't know for certain, but we can still be happy with what we've been presented instead of frustrated. I'm sure there's some people that are frustrated and just like, no, I need to know exactly what happened. No.
Well, that's always going to be the case with most series finales, no matter how excellent they are. I'll tell you something, as far as the Laurie thing is concerned, I will confess that when that episode aired, I guess that was Certified, I did think she had killed herself. But in the episode, the penultimate one, the most powerful man in the world and his twin brother or twin whatever, the fact that she didn't appear there, because everyone he's running into are, you know, dead people. I actually thought, if Laurie doesn't show up here, then I'm not so sure she killed herself after all. Because I kept waiting for her to show up, and when she didn't, I was like, and I thought he would be like shocked to see her also. Made me think she was alive, actually.
Yeah, because I was, when I watched the Certified, I was pretty certain that she was still alive, and I was just seeing like a cathartic scene instead of like a suicide scene. But then in the following episode, I had a few seconds for him. It's like, oh, I was way wrong, because when Liv Tyler shows up and is the vice president, and Kevin, like, you know, they don't show her right away, and they show Kevin have this like, you know, kind of a, you know, half stunned reaction. It's like, oh fuck, it's gonna be Laurie, and I was wrong. And like, damn, and like it was her, and I was like, okay.
Exactly. I had the exact same reaction, and I was like, oh, it's gonna be Laurie. Like, oh, it's not Laurie. Oh, okay, maybe she might be alive. There you know. So we get to the end of this episode after Kevin admits that he just put on this whole big show just as a way to thinking it might be a way to start over. A very bizarre plan or scheme, I would say, because I don't know, I'm not sure how you keep that up, especially if you think you'll find her and bring her back to the States where, you know, with your friends and everything. But, you know, that's fine. It made for great TV, so I don't really care. So we have, now here's the thing. When he admits that he's told this huge lie, and he starts being real with her, and it's interesting that it's at that point when he's talking to her, this when they're still outside, when she's still with the doves and everything, it's the most calm she's been with him compared to any of the previous scenes we had between them. And I liked, and the way I'm choosing to interpret it is because of how I feel about her, what the story she tells is, okay, Kevin just tried to do this whole big story, this whole big lie, in order to try, you know, to make things better as a way of kind of like help trying to erase the past and really to start, you know, because it was something that would just be a nicer way to go about things. It's a nicer story, so to speak. And I think that almost gives her, not carte blanche, but it almost enables her to do likewise if one chooses to see her story that way. Yeah. Now, I know you were very emotionally affected by her story. I think most people watching were. I was to a certain degree as well. Not as much as I thought I would be. But I think I was in a certain level of sadness for a lot of the episode, but I wasn't quite as teary as I thought I'd be, but I still was. Now, how did you feel while you were watching her tell the story and about everything that happened as far when she went through the machine, and what was your take on it?
At that time, I definitely took it as, like, I was more thinking about, like, the fact that I hadn't considered that, like, option. So, like, the people that departed, like, being in, like, a, you know, another reality that's, like, the same thing, and there's just less people. I'm just like, oh, you know, I didn't think about that. That's kind of cool. And then, you know, I was talking about the episode afterwards to CJ about it, and, like, how I thought it was really cool, like, the line about how they didn't have, like, enough pilots to, like, really have, like, a functional, like, air infrastructure. And I was like, oh, that makes sense. You know, you only have, like, you know, 1 out of 50 people, so it might be kind of hard to, like, you know, have air traffic controllers and all this other crap it takes to, like, you know, put something together. And it's like, huh, that kind of makes sense. Like, mm-hmm. You'd still have all these, like, buildings and food and all this other crap, but you wouldn't necessarily have, like, the staff to, like, you know, use it. And I just thought it was more kind of, like, cool and interesting. I didn't really, like, you know, take any time to doubt it, because I was just kind of, like, spending my time thinking, like, how would it actually work, and, like, how those people would be reacting to what happened, like, how it must be on their end. Because I hadn't really considered that, like, the people that, like, you know, departed might think that, like, you know, like, would have the same experience, just, like, more people are gone. I never even, like, considered, like, you know, their perspective in would be anything like that. So I was more just like, you know, my wheels were spinning in all sorts of different directions. I didn't have time to doubt her narrative at the time.
I would say, should I go right to whether I doubted the narrative or not, or, well, about her story. It was one of those interesting things. You know, I'm listening to it, and I'm you know, it's fascinating. The fact that she has, you know, whatever number of details, that's not proof. Just because I think I read someone say this online, which made no sense to me. It's like, that's not proof of truth. The level of detail, she doesn't have proof of her details, so that doesn't mean anything. It's just a fascinating story. Quite frankly, if 98% of the world's population, you know, blinked out of existence like that, there would probably be quite the level of... It'd be interesting to see how long anarchy would reign. Because think about how many things would be decimated. Whether it be, you know, authority or government or whatever, you know, around the world. There's so many things. How many? Geez, if a few planes dropped out of the sky. in this, that they were all dropping out of the sky there, because, like she said, there's, like, almost no pilots, right?
Yeah.
So,
right, of course, there'd be a lot less people on them too.
Right, but they'd also be crashing and destroying cities.
Yeah, and stuff. Yeah, it'd be a hot mess. Yeah.
I'm not saying it would, and also she also, if one believes her story, she's also traveling to this place 7 years later, not 7 days or 7 weeks later. So whatever, you know, things might have calmed down and life might have gotten to some state of normalcy, you know, as much as they could in that kind of a situation, I guess. I'll say here was my thing with it. I'm listening to the story. I'm cognizant already of the entire episode because I noticed that, because I couldn't miss it. The fact that, wow, there's a lot of stuff about lying throughout this whole episode. It seems like people, and they keep talking about telling stories, which has been a thing on the show. It's also kind of funny because it also reminds me a little bit of Fargo. And when we're talking about on that, you know, what is real, what is truth, what is a true story, whatever. And it seems to be happening here. I'll tell you when I didn't believe it. Because I'm listening. That also might be why I didn't get as emotionally affected by it as I thought I would, because there was a bit of skepticism with me. But it's when she, the exchange between her and Kevin right after she tells a story about whether he chooses to believe, whether he believes her or not. And the thing, the problem I usually have with that quite often, and I'm not saying that applies here, it's just my take on it. When people tell a story, they're more likely to ask if you believe them or not when they've told a lie than when they've told the truth, in my experience and the way I see things. So it that almost already made me question it more than any detail in her story. That's
why she didn't like outright ask if he believed her, though. I mean, she did just say that, like, you know, she didn't want to talk to anybody about it because she didn't think that they would believe them. So, I mean, that's, you know, maybe a roundabout way of, like, getting, you know, like, fishing for a compliment. But you know, not like a direct, like, you know, please validate what I just told you.
Right. And it's my belief that it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if her story is true or not. So I know I saw one comment on a Facebook thread. The feeling was, if it turned out she lied, then her character didn't evolve. That comment didn't make any sense to me. I didn't agree with that. I don't understand why that would, because she's still lying. Well, we've seen that throughout the whole episode. That doesn't mean anything. We just saw Kevin just do a big fat lie. Well, that's not proof of anything. The fact she was trying to live her life. And a rather kind of solitary existence, kind of, to me, almost comes off as she's like, she's punishing herself to a certain degree. She's cut herself off from everybody else. So I don't buy that. I don't really, either from a TV viewer's perspective or a writer's perspective, I don't think that's true. And I think we have seen her character go through a lot of trials by fire and evolve to a certain degree over all three seasons. But I think sometimes we get hung up on, whether a character has truly evolved. It's not about evolving. It's nice if a character evolves, if a character needs to evolve, but it's more about a character's journey and seeing where they go and how they got there and whether they learned anything or not. And if we're saying that she hasn't learned anything, I was like, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if she has or not. And I don't know if her having that, if she did have this experience, I don't know if that changes that. If that makes any sense.
No, I think this is the kind of thing where it's more important that, like, if whether or not we still like the character, like, or still empathetic towards the character, like, whether regardless of the fact she's learned anything or not, and if we still are, I mean, then you know, that gives us something to think about. You know, if we can still like Starbuck after she makes dumb mistake and stupid decision over and over and over again, you know, that says something about, you know, about ourselves a little bit, and says something about that. So it can be something like that for me.
Yeah, and you know, she's. What makes her a great character? I mean, she's a deeply flawed character. She's done, as we were talking before, she's done some really shitty things. So is he. So is he. So have they all at one point or another. You could point to any character here, and then you could at least find one or two really horrible things they've done. It's not just those two. You could point to Matt and the whole business of what happened with his wife and how it still seems like, yeah, I think you kind of a little rapey there, or John or Laurie or whomever. Here's the thing. I mean no offense to the people who are adamant about the story being true, because there is no right or wrong. You know, it could be true, it might not be true. It's up to each person to decide that for themselves, I think. What I don't like, and I've felt this from some things I've seen online, not all, but some, that some people want to believe it because it's giving them an explanation for what happened. And that bugs me a little bit because, and that's also one of the reasons I'm kind of, I tend to err more on the, or feel, or I'm listening more towards the, it wasn't real, because they were never supposed to tell us what happened to them.
No.
I mean,
and, you know, Lindelof is like, you know, he's, you know, like you couldn't blame him for saying that they would never explain anything just to get people to stop, like, you know, asking about it or,
right,
you know, somewhat whatever. So, like, it could go either way. But yeah, they made it pretty, you know, said time and time again they're never going to have an explanation for it. So
right,
there's no reason to expect that, like, you know, weird radiation just like zapped down all over the place and, you know, random spots and did this thing. There's no reason that that explanation is any more valid than like the other ones that have been floated around by the various cults and,
right,
you know,
exactly. And, you know, and if with her story, I mean, it's a good story. And again, may very well be true. But there's certain things about it one starts to question if you start thinking about it. And it's that kind of thing, like, you don't, I think, and when people are posting online, they're posting it after having just watched it or the next day after having watched just the previous night, whatever. And I'm sure they have given the show some thought. It is that kind of an episode where you're thinking about it after. But you start putting together the details, or you start taking apart the details. There are things that are like, if, like, I think one of the biggest ones is, if the guy who invented the machine was there, and thus clearly ends up having the capability of building the machine again, and that's how she got back, it seems odd that he wouldn't have done that in the previous 7 years for any reason, and he would have only done it just for her benefit and not anyone else. There's something about that seems off to me. That's one of the bigger leaps of faith in her story. It's like, really? Because there's probably a bunch of people who might want to get back or not. And if he has this machine where he can go back and forth, because if he can do it one way and he can do it the other way, then people can travel back and forth. So I know someone tried to dismiss, like, oh, then he wouldn't be able to get back. Like, no, that doesn't make any sense. She got there. She's going to get back, of course. So he could do it, so he can go back and forth.
Yeah, I thought it'd be kind of odd that, like, you know, she'd be able to get this guy to build another machine, and, like, you know, like, kind of question, like, the mechanics, just like, you know, like, what, this guy's just going to build this, like, big crazy contraption with, like, you know, just like kind of like from scratch without, like, you know, any help from anybody that did it the first time. You know, I suppose it's doable, but it seems like, you know, if why would this guy bother doing it just for her? You know, in a world where, you know. And she probably doesn't have like a ton of money or, you know, money and resources are valued so much differently as to what she would be able to say to sway this guy into doing it is, you know, dubious.
Yeah, but it's like, real, like Tom Cruise couldn't track down this guy and zap back. So wasn't Tom Cruise one of the people taken, if I remember, in the early goings? I think he was, right? But I think a lot of celebrities were, but I'm just trying to pick, like, you know, you'd think someone, you know, locally would have tracked down this guy. But who knows? But again, I don't think it, ultimately, I don't think it matters. I think the feeling, I think people want to believe it's true because it gives it more of a quote unquote happy ending, I suppose. I think it's a bittersweet, but more happy than not ending either way. I don't think it matters. Whether it's true or not. So
no,
that's my feeling on it, at least.
Yeah. And I do, you know, I'm definitely, you know, not sure if what happened, obviously. I kind of have a, you know, just a kind of like a half-cock theory that maybe something happened to her where, like, she kind of went into, like, you know, a world, like, you know, whether the machine worked or not, but maybe she, like, went into some kind of world, like Kevin's world, and, like, you know, her version of, like, you know, nuking the whole thing was, like, you know, going back through another machine, and, like, that's, like, how she kind of, like, you know, dealt with her issues and came back to, like, you know, reality or whatever, you know, maybe something like that. I don't know.
Possibly. Again, it's one of those things you can, it's almost like create your own adventure. You can create any number of different types of explanations or interpretations. And unlike some shows, I think it's not, I think it's less about debating and more about discussing, and just, you know, and because I don't think you can be right or wrong on this. I mean, we've seen other series finales that had a maybe not to such a great degree, but still had a certain level of ambiguity as far as how they ended. Mad Men, for example, has a certain amount of ambiguity to how it ends. But I think we all, I think you and I both choose to interpret it a certain way, and most people do. But then I've heard other interpretations of that as well. And that now, while that wasn't polarizing the way Lost was or The Sopranos, there were some people who had their issues with that. I don't. I think we enjoyed it tremendously.
Yeah, I'd give, as finales go, I'd give this an A, a high A,
Yeah,
a
this is.
series finale still.
Yeah, I would say this is definitely in the upper percentile as far as series finales. I'm not of the mindset to really start doing a compare and contrast because they're all. It's like comparing. It's basically, you're comparing TV shows as well because they're totally different types of shows.
Yeah, definitely. For me, it feels like it's going to hold up more than some have.
Yes.
Like I recently rewatched the Star Trek Next Generation finale, and it's good, but it doesn't quite hold up as much as it used to for me. But this kind of has the impression that like it'll be really good.
Right.
You know.
I think with series finales, you tend to have the handful that, quote unquote, stuck the landing. Like, yeah, you did it. You pulled it off, no qualms. And then you have those that mostly were good, but you might have certain issues with, but you try to forgive them because, overall you enjoyed it. And then you drift more to the polarizing ones, and then the ones that just out and out sucked. Seen
Yeah.
all, it's run the gamut. And it's funny because sometimes it shows you don't even think about, which might have had like a stuck, like Justified had a great series finale. I thought that was just like dead on
Yeah.
perfect way to end that show. And not a show that's based on any kind of mystery or wonder or anything like that. It was a completion of these characters' storylines and threads in a way that made sense for the series we had watched.
Right. Yeah,
And
this series finale, like as we got ready for the Leftovers weekend, it kind of spurred me to pick up 6 Feet Under again, because I've heard that, that finale is known to be one of the better, more highly regarded series finales. So I started started that. I'm gonna try to plow through that over the summer as we have a little bit less shows to watch.
right. Yeah, without spoiling it, since you're not aware of it, my feeling on the 6 Feet Under finale, and I think in one of my very first blogs I wrote something about TV finales. I think 6 Feet Under has prop might have the best final minutes of any finale, certainly the most memorable, and where it was like, wow, and talk about tears. As an overall episode, and when I talk to people who watch 6 Feet Under, I was like, do you really remember much of what happened in the first 45 odd minutes of that episode? Because I don't. I mean, I sort of do, but it wasn't anything like, wow. It was like, oh, it was fine. And then
Yeah.
you get hit with what happens in the final minutes, which is just like, oh man, yep. I don't think there's been a finale, even Lost or whatever, that I've cried as much as the 6 Feet Under finale, those
Oh,
last
sweet.
minutes.
I'm looking forward to that then.
Those manipulative bastards. But just and it's like I know like your like BSG is one of your favorite shows, but that's a finale that I know people who love that finale, and I know people who have their issues with it.
Oh yeah.
I actually do have some issues with it. They're not huge,
Yeah.
so. But it was just one of those where I think I liked it, but I didn't love it. But that kind of dovetails with my issues of certain storylines in the final season anyway. But that's just an example of a finale I can recall. Again, we're not going to spoil anything here, where people were like, "Huh," about the how it ended. And I know a lot of people loved it, and I do know a certain number of people who are like, "Yeah, I really didn't like that finale very much, especially blah blah blah." It's like, But I know you're a fan of the finale because you love the final season entirely, if I recall.
Yeah, not everything, but I thought the finale was really nicely done, and I'm totally satisfied with it, even though the bit at the very end is kind of lame, but other than that, yeah.
I guess for me there was just a certain level of, and this can happen with a lot of shows, unfortunately, almost an anticlimactic feel for me at the time. I don't know. I don't know. I haven't seen it in a while, so I almost and I sold it at a yard sale, so I can't immediately rewatch it anymore.
Ooh.
So, well, you know, I'm poor. Yeah, I'm trying to make money here. but one day I'm sure that'll be a show I will eventually rewatch somewhere down the line. I've already done a rewatch of BSJ at least a couple times over the years because you know I owned it, goddammit.
Yeah.
But now I don't. So anyway, to finish up here, so yeah, so it came down to being Nora and Kevin. It looks like they're together by the end of this with that really sweet smile she gives him and everything. Were you surprised that a show that has been kind of known for being kind of as bleak or as sad or, you know, gut-churning as this show has been, ended on what could be seen as like a positive, kind of a lovely note the way it did? Was that in any way surprising for you?
No, I mean, you know, we definitely had plenty of gut punches last night, but I didn't figure it was going to end on a negative note. I just didn't, you know, it just kind of felt like they've put us through a lot of crap. They weren't going to just like, you know, they weren't going to twist the knife right at the end. I didn't really, I never really thought they were going to do that. I didn't know how it was going to work out, and I didn't really expect Kevin and Nora to get back together, but I expected, you know, some kind of, you know, more happy, peaceful resolution than just some, like, you know, end of the world crap or something. Or, you know.
See, I thought Kevin was going to keep transporting from place to place, and he was never going to come home. Oh, wait, that's Quantum Leap. Sorry. Anyway, talk about an ending. I wasn't happy with that. Why do you make Sam Beckett have a sad ending? I don't understand that. Anyway, something I'm sure we'll talk about one day because I know you love Quantum Leap.
We still have to do the Essential TV Part 2 podcast, so we'll get to that in there.
I love the fact that if we ever do that, it'll be the longest gap in between, you know, a promised podcast. We did Essential TV Part 1, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, like by podcast numbers, I'm not sure. That's like number like 14 or 15 or something like that. It's in the teens.
Yeah. And
this will be podcast, I think, 187.
Yeah. And it's funny, too, because like since we recorded that podcast, like two of my five shows have like since then have like had like new seasons after a long, long, long time off been announced and came back and aired since then because two of my shows came back.
Right. Oh, the ones that you were going to pick for, because we were supposed to do the 80s and 90s, right? You're right.
Yeah.
And I knew full well what those two shows are going to be.
Yeah. So yeah, maybe. So once they get around to like, when they make another season of Quantum Leap, then I guess we might have to just, you know, it might be a sign that we have to record that freaking podcast because it just keeps happening.
Well, I like to look at that episode of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia as being our, the closest we'll get to a little bit of a Quantum Leap. And I think there was something else I've watched where they did a whole Quantum. Oh, it was an episode of The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. They did a whole thing with Scott Bakula riffing on Quantum Leap. I forgot about that.
Wait.
Anywho, all right. So I would say that we definitely really liked it a whole bunch. It was a really good series finale. Emotionally satisfying. I personally didn't have at this point I didn't have questions that needed to be answered anymore. I just didn't. So that's why the whole whether she told the truth or not doesn't matter to me. I just thought it was just effective either way. So that's why, you know, whether it's true or not, it works, and that's symptomatic of something really well done, really good writing. So hats off to Lindelof and Perrotta for this. That they did a good job.
Yeah, the whole team did a awesome job, and I'm really satisfied. And I'm actually going to use my second 6.0 rating for this TV season. So I used the other one on the Comic Book Show podcast, and I saved the other one for this, apparently, because I'm going to use it now. So 6.0. Good job, guys.
I wasn't even thinking of grading. and I used up my sixes, so I can't give it one, so... I'm going to give it a 5.99 then. No, I'm just kidding. No one said I could. All right, so should I wrap this up for the evening?
Yeah.
All right. If you enjoyed this podcast, you'd probably enjoy hanging out on our Facebook page as well. It's the Serious TV Drama Podcast page. Find the page, like the page, and join the conversation about shows like The Leftovers and Fargo and Better Call Saul and so on. You can also find us on iTunes the very same way. Type in the Serious TV Drama Podcast there. You can subscribe to our feed as well as rate and review us. And finally, you can also follow us on the Twitter. Our handle there is at STVD Podcast. At the STVD as in Serious TV Drama Podcast. I actually tweeted that we may or may not be doing a thing about The Leftovers. So glad we actually did it, because I know I bagged that on you last night. I was singing drunken karaoke somewhere, so which is only appropriate since Kevin did karaoke once.
Yep. Perfect.
I should have sang Homeward Bound. Anyway,
you still can.
Maybe. I don't know. Oh, no, anyway. So, it's great getting together with you tonight. It's funny to watch Better Call Saul and then get together with you about a podcast, and we're not talking about Better Call Saul. We will be talking about that later this week, as well as Fargo, and since I've still been able to watch it, Twin Peaks as well, I guess we'll throw that in the mix too. Right?
Sweet. Yep. Hell yeah.
Okay, so thanks for getting together tonight, and thank you all for listening, and good night.
Good night.
I've got dreams to remember. I've got dreams to remember. Honey, I saw you there last night. Another man's arms holding you tight. Nobody knows what I feel inside. All I know, I walked away and cried. I've got dreams to remember. Listen to me.
I've got dreams.
Rough dreams.
Dreams to remember.
I know you said he was just a friend, but I saw him kiss you again and again. These eyes of mine, they don't fool me. Why did he hold you so tenderly? I've got dreams to remember. Listen, honey.
I've got dreams.
Rough dreams.
Dreams to remember.
I still want you to stay. Don't make me suffer. Don't